Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, good afternoon, and welcome to the Empowering Family Caregiver Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm John Mills, your host and co-founder of eCareDiary.com. I'm substituting for Susan Baida, who is the other co-founder of eCareDiary.com. Unfortunately, she can't do the show today. Today, the focus of our show is advanced medical directives. To help shed light on this, I am pleased to introduce our distinguished guest, Fern Wasserman, an advanced practice registered nurse and president and founder of New York Legal Nurse Consultants, Inc. New York Legal Nurse Consultants, Inc. serves the community by assisting clients with educated advanced medical directives and medical care planning decisions. Her work is a natural progression from her nursing career in critical care, organ donation, and hospice. She also serves as a liaison for New York for National Healthcare Decisions Day and is a member of the Medical Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment Implementation Team in New York. Fern, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Advanced directives are a very important thing, actually, as we were discussing just before the show. And I was very fortunate that my father, who suffered from Parkinson's disease before he passed away, had taken care of all of this. But a lot of people don't, so I think I'm really glad that we're having this show today. You have a really unique business. You work with people on advanced directives. Can you explain exactly what they are and why they are important?
Absolutely. Advanced directives are a means to make your healthcare wishes known in advance to family and loved ones and the healthcare professionals. This allows people to make medical choices before something catastrophic happens. It allows you to, an advanced directive also allows you to appoint someone in advance to make those medical decisions for you. This person doesn't have to be your closest relative. It can be someone that you're just friends with. And it allows you to tell people in advance what your choices are and allows them to interact with a healthcare team so they can do what you want them to do in the time that you're not able to make decisions for yourself. In terms of my work, I actually fill in the gap. Many medical professionals find it hard to speak about advanced directives as they equate it with dying and failure. Yeah, I said the word, it's death. I know it's very hard for people to say that word. You know, the fact is we all are going to die at some point. This is not the issue. It's actually about the way you live and how you define quality of life. And if you think about it, it can be considered a celebration of life. It's all about staying in control.
I think that's a great way to put it. As I mentioned, I have personal experience with advanced directives. You know, my father suffered from Parkinson's for a decade, and I thank my lucky stars that right after he was diagnosed, he went out and got all of his advanced directives taken care of. And he ended up, at the end of his life, not being able to communicate with us. He'd had a severe stroke, yet we knew exactly what his wishes were. And he was able to basically, he died very peacefully in a hospice, but it was exactly, I think, the way he would have wanted it to be. And there was no argument amongst the family because he laid it out very clearly.
That's beautiful. And that's exactly what I strive to do in my work. And I provide a structured conversation with my clients and facilitate this conversation between my clients, their chosen healthcare agents, and the family members. For many, these are not easy decisions, and they do change over time. It sounds like you and your father, he knew he was diagnosed with Parkinson's and said, okay, let's have this conversation. Ideally, I like to see people across the continuum while they're healthy, before they develop any life-altering medical problems. And I hope to work with them through the life care continuum. So when things change, I'm there to help their families understand why their decisions changed.
I think that's wonderful. There are a number of different documents that make up advanced directives. Maybe you could walk us through them. I mean, if you could tell us what a healthcare proxy is, for example.
Sure. A healthcare proxy is a document that allows you to state who you want as your healthcare agent, the person, the decision maker for you. Your healthcare agent is your advocate when you, or your mouthpiece when you're not able to speak for yourself. So the healthcare proxy form allows you to identify someone to make medical decisions for you. There's the living will. I will state wholeheartedly that I am not an advocate for the living will, and that is because what it does is allow you to provide the healthcare professionals a blueprint for your medical care. The problem with the living will is it's a two-dimensional document. It does not sign papers, and it does not sue the healthcare professionals. So it's kind of difficult in this time frame to say, I want this, I don't want this, and I want this care in this situation, because we can't necessarily account for every situation. So I find the living will can be a hindrance at times. And then there's MULST in New York. MULST is Medical Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. MULST is a form used for people who may be very ill, elderly, or frail. And we use it to – it's kind of a combined advanced directive / physician's orders. The physicians do need to update it on a regular basis, but it allows people to make decisions, have them in writing, have them as physician's orders that must be followed by the emergency medical service, the hospital, the nursing home. It is not, the form doesn't need to change once you're in a different institution. So those are, and another name, just so you know, for the healthcare proxy, maybe the durable power of attorney for healthcare. So they are the same form, essentially.
Interesting. It's very interesting about the living will, because my father had one, and it actually suited us very well. But I can see how it is kind of a two-dimensional document. So I could see how, depending on the situation, it might be a hindrance. Go ahead.
It sounds like you had a very good. You communicated well with your father before something happened. And it sounds like your family was on the same page. Many times I'm not seeing that. I often in my life as a healthcare practitioner, I have seen many families that have not had the discussion. And before, when I start approaching families, a patient, to say, hey, you know, have you completed a healthcare proxy? Do you know what that is? And I start the discussion and say, oh, my family will know what I want. And the truth is they don't. And that's where we run into some trouble. The patient thinks that the family is going to know, and the family has no idea.
Yeah, and it's a discussion that many people don't want to have. I remember when the whole Terri Schiavo controversy was going on, I guess that's now 6 years ago, and my father was still relatively healthy, but his health was definitely declining because of the Parkinson's. And he turned to me and he said, I don't want to live that way. He was perfectly clear about that. And it's interesting how events like that sort of tend to precipitate these discussions.
Absolutely. They're turning points. And what I have, my clients are generally in two camps. One camp is the person who has a family member who has become very ill and they don't like the care that this family member has received. And the second camp is the, oh my God, I have my mother was newly diagnosed with Alzheimer's. What do I do? So I have the urgent people, and I have the people who just had something happen that precipitated their want to move forward in completing an advanced directive. So yeah, it's definitely hard to discuss. It, you know, nobody wants to talk about death, dying, illness. They're scary topics. It's a gray area. Nobody wants to think about the great beyond. But it's about making decisions that will last a lifetime. It's a gift that you give your family. It's a means of communication.
Yeah, and that's a really good way to put it, a gift you give your family, because those times are so difficult as they are when you get to an end-of-life situation. And the fact that my father had been communicative and had laid out what he wanted really made it so much easier for his children. Now, I think, frankly, we would have all come to the same decision anyway, sort of knowing his personality, but that's not always true. I mean, I know people where there are family rifts or people aren't on the same page, and that's where these things become even more useful. But it definitely was a gift to us, and it allowed us some peace of mind with the decisions that we had to make.
It's wonderful that you had that. I can tell you that I had completed an advance directive for a friend of my family she was my second mother. I think I spent more time at her house than I did at my own house growing up. So I know her. I'm 39 years old. I knew her 37 of those years. When I worked with her on her own advance directives, I found out some things that I would have never expected. Not only did I, her daughter did as well, because I went through this discussion with her mother, my second mother, if you will, and then I went through that with her two daughters, and they were surprised with what her wishes were on some areas. So no matter how close the family might be, it's still good to have the discussion.
Absolutely. And, you know, kind of going into that, you talked a little bit about becoming the healthcare agent. That was because I was the healthcare agent, the healthcare proxy. Can you tell us a little bit what authority does the healthcare agent have?
They have no financial, they are not financially responsible at all. When you are unable to make decisions for yourself, the agent, the healthcare proxy is the form, healthcare agent is the person. So the healthcare agent is the person who is acting on your behalf. Your agent is, as I said, is your advocate. The person is charged with making medical decisions in line with your wishes, in the spirit of your wishes or your written wish. The person, as I said, was not financially responsible, and they are only charged with making medical decisions. They can see your chart as needed, and medical information may be shared with this person as long as you are unable to make decisions for yourself. Essentially, the document goes into effect once you are not able to make decisions. And I keep saying that because people, in many cases when I've been in the hospital, I'd have somebody who was completely awake, alert, and oriented, and a family member would say, I'm their healthcare proxy. You need to show me that. You need to show me the chart. No, actually, I don't. This person is awake, alert, and oriented. They can share whatever information they want with you, but you go into effect. This document goes into effect when this person is not able to make medical decisions for themselves. Up until that point, the person who is awake, alert, and oriented is making those decisions for themselves.
That's really interesting that there are people out there that think that because you're named, you know, the healthcare, you know, you're listed as a healthcare agent and the healthcare proxy, that you have medical decisions even when the person is awake and oriented.
Another common misconception is that the durable power of attorney, the plain durable power of attorney, can be used for healthcare as well. It cannot. You require a durable power of attorney for medical care to make medical decisions. So essentially, like I said, the durable power of attorney for medical care is the same as the healthcare proxy form.
That's very interesting. So when you're working on these forms, do you need to work with an attorney to fill these out, or can someone like yourself do these?
It's not a matter of me. I'm not drafting any forms.
Okay.
The attorney drafts forms. I am specifically reviewing the medical choices that this person has decided that they want or don't want. And I go through a five-part discussion about that information. The documents can be downloaded from caringinfo.org, the Department of Health website. There are state-specific ones on Caring Info, so it's not only New York. And for our specific New York ones, you can have one completed on doyourownproxy.org, and it's completely legal. To make this document legal, you require in New York, you require only two signatures of people witnessing you signing the document. The instructions are very clear on the DOH website and the caringinfo.org website in terms of whichever state specific documents you're downloading. So no, you don't require an attorney for this document at all. And what I'm specifically doing is not drafting the documents, but explaining the risks and benefits of the choices someone might need to make at a time when they are not able to make the decisions for themselves. So I go through my discussions pretty in depth. I go through tube feeding, IV feeding, antibiotics, fluid through the IV, different types of procedures that someone might go through, like a breathing tube. I go through CPR, which is cardiopulmonary resuscitation. I go through most of the issues that someone would face when they're not able to make decisions for themselves.
Do you discuss do not resuscitate in when you're discussing the when you're discussing these documents, or is
absolutely
that something?
I absolutely do, and
okay.
I explain do not resuscitate as do not resuscitate. Essentially, it does not mean do not treat. It specifically means when your heart stops that you do not want anybody providing CPR, which is basically pressing on the chest and attempting to make the person's heartbeat through an outside, through pressing on the chest. And I explain what the cardiac shock is. It's kind of like starting a car battery. It puts you, because your heart is an electrical activity and you're trying to shock the heart back into a rhythm that's going to pump the heart. So I go through exactly what that means in a little longer than I just explained, but yes, I go through CPR, and a lot of people can believe that if they choose to not be resuscitated, they're choosing not to be treated. And it's not like we're gonna, oh, this person's a DNR, gotta walk away, this person's a DNR. We don't do that. there's a lot more treatment that goes into that without just putting doing CPR on someone.
Yeah, I know that, but yeah, it's interesting that people misconstrue that. I mean, what you really, my understanding with DNR is really, it's if the heart stops on its own, you're not basically trying to restart it.
And that's exactly what it means. But there's a lot of people that are not sure of these things, and they get a lot of information and not always the right information.
Yeah, no, I know there's been a lot of misinformation out there over the last few years about advanced directives just in general, which my own personal opinion is a shame, because
mm-hmm.
I think these are incredibly critical documents.
Absolutely, and people think that I've had people say to me, oh, I don't want to sign a DNR because you're not going to do anything to me then, or they'll talk to me about how I'll be talking about hospice for some reason. And they'll say, oh, you mean I go there to die, right? And it's not, there's so much more. There's so many more, there's so much more to hospice than that. There's comfort and symptom management and making people have the lead the last days of their life being in a place that they want to be in, and they're comfortable where their family can be supported and they can have what they need during that time. Instead of maybe going, and they might be able to, a lot of hospices, they can participate in at their home.
Right.
So there's a lot of choices that need to be made, and I cover as many of those choices as possible. Because even if this healthcare agent is not making the decisions, this person is usually somewhere whispering in somebody's ear. So that person is really, though they're not, they may not be making the medical decisions because this person may be awake, alert, and oriented, they're still around to support this person.
Absolutely. Well, I would assume in most cases the healthcare agent is someone who's very close to the patient. I mean, I was the son of my father, but I assume it's either a child or a spouse or a close relative or like a best friend or partner, something along those lines.
Sometimes, not all the time. And it, sometimes people don't choose the closest person to them because that person may be too emotionally involved. And this person, based on their wishes, based on how they feel that they want to live their life, at the end, they may not want this person doing that because maybe their wishes are not completely in line with their choices. It's a personal decision, and each person makes it for their own reasons. But not always is it the case that it's somebody that close.
That's very interesting, but I guess that makes some sense now that I think about it, because, you know, there is obviously, when you're dealing with someone you're very close to, you know, your emotions can cloud your judgment a little bit.
And when you're choosing a healthcare agent, you don't want them. You want them to be able to, yes, you want them to be emotional. Yes, you want you want them to be affected by your life, but you certainly want somebody who is going to be able to take in information and make the decision in line with what your choices are. So part of the issue is the key questions that they need to ask. And that's why half the battle is making your decisions known. The other half of the battle is extracting the information from the healthcare professionals. Healthcare professionals there to help you, of course, but they don't always, they will say things in a certain manner based on what feedback they're receiving from the person they're talking to. It's a dance, like all communication. So if somebody seems like they're just complaining that the care is not good, they're going to, and that they're blaming this person's deteriorating health on the healthcare team, whether that's the case or not, the healthcare team is going to be a little more apt to speak a little less. If they're asking key questions about this person's health, this person has, like in the case of your father with the Parkinson's, he was in deteriorating health. You knew that. You knew how to you knew what he wanted, and you just asked the questions based on what he wished.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And although it was an incredibly emotional experience, and I think, you know, I think we, like many people, thought we knew that he was deteriorating rapidly, but we didn't realize quite how sick he was. And I think we all thought we had a little bit longer than we did. But, you know, once he reached the point after he'd had a stroke, and he was also suffering from aspiratory pneumonia, I mean, it was very obvious that he wasn't going to get any better. And so we really did listen to the healthcare team, even though it was very hard to hear what they were saying. But we knew we needed to do that.
But you also knew his wishes, so you had half the battle won.
Yeah. Now, as I think I may have mentioned, my wife Susan and I, who's also the co-founder of EcureDiary.com, we went out after the experience with my father and got all of our advanced directive documents done, because we realized that was the way we wanted, if something happened to us, we wanted our wishes to be clear so that we could basically die the way we wanted to die. And my father did. And
exactly.
I'm very happy we were able to do that for him.
Exactly. And I'm sure that you talked about artificial nutrition and hydration, which is the tube feeding and the IVs and antibiotics and CPR and breathing machines and pain management and hospice.
Yeah, no, we did. We did all of that. And, you know, basically, you know, we've both come to the conclusion that if we're in a situation where we basically are, in effect, brain dead and no hope for recovery, you know, we don't want to be kept alive artificially.
And there's a different, actually, that's one of the parts of my discussion is brain death is death by New York state law. So they don't have, you don't necessarily have a choice to be taken off machines at that point. But if you did have a stroke and you did have some electrical activity in your brain, that's a different situation.
Well, that's good to know. Very good to know. Well, we've kind of walked through all of that, and to your point, I guess we need to revisit this periodically, which is good to know, because we did these about 4 years ago, and it was before our daughter was born. So we should probably, I think I'm going to take your advice, and we'll take a look at these documents sometime in the not too distant future.
I suggest going over it on an annual basis or whenever something changes. So any life changes is a good time to look at the documents again and make sure that everything's in place. It's like we discussed, it's not an easy discussion, but it's an important discussion, and it makes it easier if people know what your wishes are.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the things that you're involved with, you're one of the state liaisons on National Healthcare Decisions Day, and it'd be great if you could talk a little bit about exactly what is National Healthcare Decisions Day.
National Healthcare Decision Day is April 16th annually. We're in our fourth year. The purpose is for people to make thoughtful, educated decisions about medical choices in advance and share those wishes with their appointed healthcare agent and loved ones in the event that they will require another to make those decisions for them. The National Healthcare Decisions Day Initiative is a collaborative effort of national, state, and community organizations committed to ensuring that all adults with decision-making capacity in the United States have the information and opportunity to communicate and document their healthcare decisions.
That sounds great. So April 15th,
April 15th.
Oh, 16th. You said 15th. Isn't that tax day?
It's Saturday this year. It's the day after tax day. I work at St. Luke's, and we're going to be doing a poster session a couple of days before. I've been trying to collaborate with any organization who would be interested in me discussing advanced directives at a community event. I'd be happy to do it on April 16th if anybody would be interested. And they can contact me via email if they're interested.
That's great. Actually, we would like to talk to you about promoting this more, because we have both a blog and a newsletter. So it would be great to get, in addition to having just mentioned it on the radio show here, but we'd love to get it out to the rest of our audience, because this is a really important thing, and I think it would be really good to spread the word, because I wasn't even aware of it until now.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that, actually. I've been sending it as a mass email, and I put it on the bottom of my emails, share your wishes, make your wishes known, National Healthcare Decisions Day, April 16th. Any which way we can get the word out for the listeners and whomever else is interested, I'm happy to do that. There's some great resources out there, and a lot of it's self-service. And for some people that works well. I'm there to help the people that don't know where to start, that need the help of someone to make sure that they have all their ducks in a row. Kind of the difference between TurboTax and an accountant.
Right. Well, people. I mean, it's great that it's available in both, and I think it's wonderful what you're doing. We only have a couple more minutes left on the show, so I wanted to give you an opportunity to discuss any other services that are being offered by your organization that we didn't get a chance to discuss.
My company does advanced care planning facilitation throughout the lifespan, as we were discussing. Patient advocacy as it relates specifically to the client who may become incapacitated, assistance translating medical information for the patients and their families. I provide the healthcare agent and family the tools to make educated decisions. Many healthcare agents or family members who are faced with making medical decisions are overwhelmed. In a time of distress, most people are not thinking clearly. I'm the friend who is the nurse whispering in their ear, helping them with the critical questions so that they can make educated decisions. I also do speaking engagements, and the discussions that I've done so far are how to appoint the right healthcare agent, how to make your healthcare agent your advocate, and when and how to have an advanced directive discussion with your family and loved ones.
Fern, thank you so much for being on the show with us. I mean, this is just such an important topic, and it's one that I think, people don't know a lot about, and there's just a lot of misinformation out there. So I think it's what we've discussed today has been great, and we're definitely going to work with you about promoting National Healthcare Decisions Day, because I just think it's so important.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to be on your show.
Great. And we'll be in touch with you. And let me tell our audience where you can learn more about Fern. You can go to her website at newyorklegalnurseconsultants.com. That's N-E-W-Y-O-R-K-L-E-G-A-L-N-U-R-S-E. SEConsultants.com. And we're also going to put a link on our website, Fern. So we'll put it up on the website. You can go to www.ecarediary.com and also find it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure. It's been great having you, Fern, and thank you so much. And I'd also like to thank our audience for tuning in. Join us next time on Tuesday, March 29th at 2 p.m. Eastern for our new second online radio show, Caregiver and the Physician Conversations. It's hosted by eCare Diaries caregiving expert Marjorie Pabst, who will interview Dr. Maria Gonzalez, a board-certified family medicine physician and geriatrician with special interest in dementia, polypharmacy, and preventive medicine for older adults. To learn more about eCare Diary and our upcoming shows, visit www.ecarediary.com. Registration is free and gives you immediate access to your personal care diary tool. You can also find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. My address is eCareDiaryJohn. Thank you again, and tune in next week.